Dr. Roland Kays, thanks for spending some time with us.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
You know, our timing's good because I can't tell you how many articles I've read lately that either you helped author or references your work. So you're clearly getting the word out there about studying wildlife in the wild.
Well, thanks. Yeah, they're charismatic animals, so the pictures go a long way to getting the word out.
Now, you have a very interesting career. I know you teach, of course, at North Carolina State, but you're also involved with the North Carolina Museum of Natural Sciences and do a great deal of field research. Most of what I've read about your work, whether it's bats or other species, you helped found the MoveBank Animal Tracking Database, as well as the eMammal Camera Tracking Database. So tell us a bit about what people are learning today about animal movements.
Well, sure. We're learning a lot, and a lot of it comes from technology because animals are out there, and they generally avoid us. Most mammals are only come out at night in the first place, and if they see you walking down the trail with a headlight, they get out of the way a long time beforehand. So just going out with the binoculars and a notebook, kind of old school, is really limited to what you can learn about how animals are moving around. But with technology, be it camera traps that record, you know, sit at a location and record any animal that walks by, or modern GPS tracking where you put a device, you know, on an animal like a radio collar or something and send them up and go and then find out everywhere that they're going, that is just opening up a huge world of discovery for us to understand how animals are, you know, using the planet. And a lot of times these questions are how can animals and humans, you know, share this space together?
Absolutely. You know, it's interesting that all over the world, surprising information has been found through camera traps. You may know the Cincinnati Zoo, where I work, is very involved with Sumatran rhinos. And, of course, the only way they can determine, frankly, that there are any still in the wild in Sumatra is once in a while they'll catch one on a camera trap.
Yeah, camera traps are great for documenting rare species. The Javan rhino is another one where we have in this in my book, we have what's thought to be the very last one that survived in Vietnam, was caught on camera trap shortly before it was poached. And camera traps, you know, not only do they show you that the animals are there, but for some things like rhinos, you can often identify individuals based on scars or the, you know, the pattern of their horns or something like that. So you can start to actually count individual animals and get a real census.
Now, I know I read some that through your work, you're also monitoring movements of bats. And of course, most listeners are very familiar with bats here, for instance, in the Midwest. Anyone with an old house probably literally has bats in their belfry. And yet sometimes they move a great deal, and talk about hard for people to know. So tell us what tracking a bat would entail.
Wow, bats are really hard because most of them are really small, and limits on our tracking technology are a lot of the limits on our tracking technology are associated with the size of the technology that we have. You can't take something the size of a cell phone and strap it to a bat because it wouldn't go anywhere. Mm-hmm. So we need really, really small electronics. Pretty much all the bats in North America are too small to really be tracked with a GPS unit. So instead, for bats in North America, we have to use little radio transmitters, which send out a ping, and then you have to run around and try to follow the bats, you know, from your car or even from an airplane, because, of course, they fly so far. So we're still actually really limited in our knowledge about North American bat movements, which is super important right now, because we're facing a double crisis of this white nose syndrome that's affecting the cave bats, this fungal disease that's wiped out a lot of cave bats, and understanding how bats are moving between these caves could help us try to limit the spread of this disease. And then the other real problem we're having for the tree bats, which is another group of bats that doesn't go in caves, so they should be safe from white nose, but they're getting nailed by wind turbines. And so, those are migrating bats. So, we're desperately trying to understand their migratory patterns to try to mitigate the potential conflict with wind turbines.
Yeah, it's an interesting question, certainly, because people want to use sustainable energy. But whether it's bats at night, it's birds, whenever, I mean, they can take their toll, no doubt. Now, Roland, your career, honestly, in reading about it, sounds like straight out of the movies, you know, Indiana Jones. You're involved with the museum, you're involved as a professor, you're an author of books, and yet you're banging through the tropics discovering new species. Explain to listeners what an olinguito is, and I understand you discovered that in the rainforest?
Yeah, I was part of the team working with the Smithsonian that discovered a new species we called the olinguito. It has been described not by scientists, but by popular media as a mix between a teddy bear and a cat. It's actually a relative of the raccoon. It's now the smallest member of the raccoon family. They live in the trees in the cloud forest of Ecuador and Colombia. And if you've ever been to a cloud forest, of course, there's lots of clouds. And if you go out at night and shine your headlight up into the trees where this animal lives, you often just see sort of mists and clouds. Mm-hmm. And so this animal remained undescribed until we published our paper a couple years ago.
And I would bet in terms of appearance, in addition to your very cute one about it looking like a teddy bear and a cat, if people are familiar with what other Latin American animal might it look like?
Well, I don't know if people know what a kinkajou is.
There you go.
But it's similar to a kinkajou. They have long tails that have really faint rings on them. They're kind of brownish colored. And what's interesting, actually, is once we described the species, there was a picture taken by a bird watcher that actually got a picture before we described the species, and we found it on the internet. And we realized, hey, this is a new species. So that picture went viral when mm-hmm. Tribe species olinguito was everywhere around the world. And what was great about that was we started getting lots of other pictures. And over the last couple of years, we've gotten a lot of pictures contributed by citizen scientists saying, hey, is this an olinguito? I think this might be an olinguito. And we've got a lot of new records of this species. And some were not olinguitos, but some of the pictures were good enough that we could tell they definitely were. So we're actually now in the process of revising our understanding of the species by adding these new locations from these photographs and rerunning some of our range models to understand where the species live, what forest it needs, and how big of an area it might still live in. So a really cool example of how sort of getting a story out there to go viral then leads to more information via citizen science and a better scientific understanding and a conservation understanding for the species.
And, of course, what's fun about that is people might imagine, well, there's not that much more to discover out there, maybe just a few insects. But sure enough, here's a mammal species, of which there are really only just a few thousand, and you discover a whole new mammal species is pretty darn neat.
Right. Well, and, scientists are finding new mammal species pretty much. There's a couple every year. They're usually bats and rats. Those mm-hmm. are the two most diverse groups of mammals, and so that's where most of the new discoveries are coming. So what was special about the olinguito is it wasn't a bat or a rat. I sort of joke around that it was the first new cute mammal discovery in 30 years, although I'm sure there's bat lovers and rat lovers that would contest that one.
Absolutely. Well, it does sound interesting. So give us your take. You're involved, it sounds like, everything from undergraduate students to experts around the world. You visited many ecosystems. Do you think there's hope? There's such bad news these days about biological diversity. What do you think the future looks like 100 years from now?
No, I think there is hope. And I think it comes some from the human side and some from the animal side. One of the things that we're seeing, here in Eastern North America is there's tons of wildlife out there. And they're learning and adapting and surviving. The ones that adapt to our presence are the ones that are surviving and passing their genes on. They're literally evolving right in front of us. There's some examples, for example, of the eastern coyote that actually has genes from wolves and dogs mm-hmm. and has colonized the entire East Coast and is moving into cities. And you mentioned about the people would be surprised to know that there's new things to be discovered, new species. Well, there's still new things to be discovered about the animals living right in our backyard. And we're working with citizen scientists to have them run camera traps. And some school kids, some retired folks, some people who just love nature and want to see pictures of animals in their backyard. And they're helping us learn about new things about these animals that are, adapting and really moving into our cities over the last few decades.
Absolutely. And if folks are interested in learning more about that and participating, Roland's new book is called Candid Creatures, How Camera Traps Reveal the Mysteries of Nature. Well, Dr. Roland Kays, you're nice to take a few minutes with us. The work you're doing is important. And I know at zoos, we try to inspire people with wildlife. And I found it inspiring to hear about all the stuff you're doing.
Oh, great. Well, thank you so much for the compliment, and I hope you enjoy the book.
You bet. Thanks very much.
Thanks. Yeah, that was fun.
My guest has been Dr. Roland Kays from North Carolina State University, author of the book Candid Creatures, How Camera Traps Reveal the Mysteries of Nature. For Cincinnati Edition, I'm Thane Maynard.